Just by way of curiosity, how many in here have seen any of the Left Behind movies? Okay. The Left Behind movies were based on books by a guy by the name of Tim LaHaye and Jerry Jenkins. And the first one came out in 2000, and then there was a second one that came out in 2002 that had Kirk Cameron starring in it. And then there was a 2014 edition that came out that had Nicolas Cage in it. And that sure stirred up interest and created some maybe converts to the idea that the doctrine of the rapture is in fact a biblical doctrine, and that in some remote way these movies have accurately portrayed what the Bible has to say about this particular doctrine. It actually goes back to earlier times than that. During 1969, a guy by the name of Hal Lindsey wrote his book, the best-known book that he has written, called The Late Great Planet Earth. It was published in 1970, and the book became a bestseller. It made Hal Lindsey a very wealthy man. And he was one that can't be criticized for not being one that knows how to time things, because it was right on the heels of the Six-Day War in Israel. And the book fueled popularity of dispensationalism and the support of ethnic Jews as the chosen people of God. And so it was a book that really became very popular. As a matter of fact, there have been, are you ready for this, 42 printings of this book. And you can probably see the title on the top, over 15 million sold. But and he had this thing that he called Countdown to Armageddon. And the Countdown to Armageddon, he indicated that he believed that it was possible that the Battle of Armageddon was that which was going to soon occur. And in the what he called, quote, the not too distant future. Well, that not too distant future happened to be in the decade of the 80s. Now, have I missed something, or have the 80s already come and gone? So I think Hal Lindsey was off and continues to be off with every succeeding year that comes and goes. You know, we sing several songs by Fanny J. Crosby, and she loved the word rapture. Have you ever noticed that? In her songs, the word rapture was a word that she uses a lot. And the thing about the word rapture is it can mean happy, but it can also be in reference to this doctrine of the rapture that we're going to explain more thoroughly here in just a minute. But the song Sing On, Ye Joyful Pilgrims, you know that song? Well, she uses the word rapture in that song, but it means happy in that song, so you know, no problem with that. How about Blessed Assurance? Well, in that song she says, visions of rapture now burst on my sight. Okay. How about I Shall Know Him? I don't know if you sing that song here in Florida or not, but she says, oh, the soul-thrilling rapture when I view His blessed face. Kind of hard to duck that one on what she's talking about. And Jesus, Keep Me Near the Cross. How about that song? You know that one? Till My Raptured Soul Shall Find Rest Beyond the River. So when we think about the doctrine of the rapture, we are exposed to it on different levels. And sometimes we might be found guilty of singing a song that we're not fully connected with. And we're not here to talk about songs necessarily, but in my mind, if I'm singing that song, I'm just saying it's happy. I'm going with happy as the definition of rapture in that particular song, and then just leave it with that. Another thing too, and those of us that have been teaching, every time someone says that Denny's been preaching for X number of years, I'm going, that can't be right. I'm not even that old. But the blunt reality is I am that old. But I remember, you remember December 12th, 2012? And all of the hoopla and all of the things, and man, that was going to be the day. And the number of predictors that lined up saying December 12th is going to be the end of it all was simply astounding and amazing. And the topic of the rapture was one that is intimately connected with the idea of signs that are pointing to a particular date that is going to bring on this great event called the rapture. Well, when we think about December 12th of 2012, it too came and went. So what are we talking about with this particular doctrine? I don't know how familiar you are with that, and there may even be some here this afternoon that personally has embraced this doctrine, and that's okay. I hope that we're going to appreciate some time to study the topic together. The rapture basically is a theory that argues that Jesus is going to return twice. Now, we already returned once, the incarnation, when he became flesh and dwelt among us, and then he ascended to heaven, and now there's going to be two returns yet to come. The first rapture has to do with his rapturing the saints, or the rapturing of the church and into heaven. Meanwhile, the unsaved are left on earth to suffer. People tell of men waking up and finding their wives and their children mysteriously gone. Others at work abruptly disappear from their machines and from their desks. And they'll talk about pilots and drivers that suddenly disappear, that are creating horrific crashes and crippling people as a result of these violent wrecks. Those that are not raptured panic, and the phone lines are jammed, chaos reigns. And if you're left, it's because you're wicked. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. All of the righteous are gone. And only the worst of the worst are those that remain. And so with all the good people gone, you can just imagine lawlessness now is completely run amok. Murder, rape, robbery, and every kind of sinful activity will take place. And this will happen for about 7 years. Then the second return of Christ. Well, in between, I'm getting a little bit ahead of myself, but I'm touching with some other lectures that have taken place in which we've talked about the Antichrist. So during that 7 year period of time, the Antichrist will arise, and he will be that which is encouraging the further lawlessness and supposedly amassing a great army that is going to defeat Christ if and when he ever decides to come back. And then after 7 years, Jesus comes back. And he returns with his mighty army of saints. And the Battle of Armageddon takes place. That also is a topic that is happening as we speak. And the wicked are going to be defeated. And then Jesus is going to set up a literal throne in Jerusalem to begin his 1,000-year reign. Okay, I threw a lot of stuff at you, but let's kind of break it down. So we got signs that are leading us to the rapture. The rapture is that which is all the righteous are taken, all the wicked are left, and they're left to fend for themselves for 7 years. During that 7 year period of time, a particular character by the name of the Antichrist will arise and will basically be the one that is at large and in charge of the world at that time, and getting together an army in order to face Christ if and when Christ decides to come back. And after 7 years, Christ does come back. You have this battle of Armageddon. Christ wins, and Christ sets up his kingdom on earth. Okay, that in a nutshell is the doctrine. Now, if you're asking who believes this exactly, you might be surprised to know that you've got Jehovah's Witnesses, you've got Mormons, you've got several other groups like Baptists and Episcopalians and Presbyterians. Certain segments of those religious groups embrace this doctrine. But basically, they're saying that where we are right now is on the threshold of the rapture. It is the next event. And time doesn't allow us to do a deep dive into the book of Revelation, but if you've studied the book of Revelation, you know that John there talks about seven trumpets. And, well, they argue that six of the seven trumpets have already blown, and now we're on the doorstep of the seventh trumpet being blown, and that's the next thing that's going to happen, is that trumpet being blown and the rapture occurring. So the question that we need to ask, that we always want to ask, is this doctrine of the rapture a biblical doctrine? As with most doctrines, there are some passages that are used that, according to those that support the theory and promote the theory, contend that those are the verses that support the doctrine and establish the truth of the doctrine. And again, time won't allow us to do a deep dive on all of the passages, but there are basically 16 passages that are the primary passages that are used by this group. We won't look at all 16, but we'll certainly look at the major ones. All right, so if you've got your Old Testaments with you, let's turn first to Daniel chapter 12. And verse 1. Now at that time, Michael, the great prince, who stands guard over the sons of your people, will arise. And there will be a time of distress, such as never occurred since there was a nation. Until that time, and at that time, your people, everyone who is found written in the book, will be rescued. All right, so they focus on this verse, and they believe that this is one of the verses that support the idea. And you'll notice that it is also connected, and I have failed to mention, the great distress. They believe that right on the heels of the rapture is there's a period of great distress that Jesus talks about in Matthew chapter 24, which I'm actually going to talk about tomorrow, is the idea of Matthew 24 and the great distress. What is interesting is, as I was reading a number of people that are supporting the doctrine of the rapture, they conveniently don't say anything about verse 2. Now, but before we get to verse 2, though, what they'll argue is that in the last part of the verse, we'll be rescued, last part of verse 1, that the word rescued actually is a Hebrew word that means raptured. Well, I looked up the Hebrew word, and raptured was not one of the possible definitions of that particular word, but yet that still is what is being promoted, is that those that were going to be found faithful are going to be raptured, but the text actually says that they are going to be rescued, or they're going to be delivered. But notice also verse 2. And many of those who sleep in the dust of the ground will awake, these to everlasting life, but the others to disgrace and everlasting contempt. Now, if you'll notice, the language certainly does seem to indicate to me, I'm curious as it does, if it does to you, that there's going to be a general resurrection of all. Those who are in the dust are going to awake. And then he divides the two groups that are in the dust, and of those, some of which will go to everlasting life, some of which disgrace and everlasting contempt. You don't see anything at all about a seven-year gap in between resurrections or anything along that line, but that there's going to be a universal resurrection of all at the same time. Now, you might say, Denny, I'm thinking Jesus taught that, didn't he? And you'd be right. In John in chapter 5 in verse 28 and verse 29, Jesus says, all who are in the tomb shall hear his voice and come forth. Those who did the good deeds to a resurrection of life, those who did the evil deeds to a resurrection of judgment. And that's a verse that we'll talk about some more here in a minute. But yeah, the idea of one judgment for all is taught by Jesus, is confirmed by John in the Revelation, John chapter 20, verses 11 through 15. So yeah, the idea of there being a seven-year gap or anything like that just doesn't fit from the scripture. The second verse that they would look at is one that is found in the Gospel of Matthew, chapter 24. And we're going to go ahead and look at that, even though I'm going to be talking about Matthew 24 tomorrow. So if you'd like to turn there, Matthew 24. Verses 29 through 31. Notice Jesus here is saying, but immediately after the tribulation of those days, the sun will be darkened, the moon will not give its light, the stars will fall from the sky, and the powers of the heavens will be shaken. And then the sign of the Son of Man will appear in the sky, and then all the tribes of the earth will mourn, and they will see the Son of Man coming on the clouds of the sky with power and great glory. And he will send forth his angel with a great trumpet, and they will gather together his elect from the four winds, from one end of the sky to the other. All right, so if you'll notice there in verse 31, the word gather, they claim is the word rapture. And he is going to rapture the elect from one end of the sky to the other. Well, again, some problems with that. First of all, it's not the word rapture. The word there doesn't mean rapture. But also, you'll notice that the timing doesn't line up with the doctrine of the rapture, because you've got the tribulation occurring, and then he says after the tribulation of those days is when these particular events are going to take place. Well, you've got the rapture, then 7 years, then Jesus returning. But that doesn't line up with what Matthew is saying here, unless you're going to stick the Great Tribulation in the 7 years, which some of them do, and I'll talk about that as well, and then say that that happens after that. But, you know, one of the things that we know regarding the coming of Jesus, and I'm of the opinion that even this verse, this section of verses, it's actually called the Little Apocalypse here in Matthew 24, is still talking about the destruction of Jerusalem, and that Jesus doesn't talk about the end of time until we get to verse 36 here in Matthew 24. And so the events being described have to do with the cataclysmic event that occurred in AD 70 when the Roman army destroyed the city of Jerusalem. Well, that was a coming of Jesus, and it was a demonstration of his power and lordship, and that's what's being described in those verses there. While you've got your Bibles open to Matthew 24, to slide down to verses 40 and 41. Then there will be two men in the field. One will be taken, and one will be left. Two women will be grinding at the mill. One will be taken, and one will be left. All right, so here they believe is a passage that is more clear on the doctrine of the rapture. And you've got some people that are suddenly they're gone. And the woman there that's grinding at the mill. Next thing she knows that her fellow worker is gone. And the two men in the field, next thing he knows, his fellow worker is gone. But what's interesting is that the word that's used there is a word that more frequently is translated in the Bible as received. And think about how that changes your understanding of what is being said here. That one's going to be received and one is not going to be received. Well, that definitely does describe what's going to happen on Judgment Day. As you look at Matthew chapter 25, there is this parting of the sheep and the goats. And those are going to be received where Jesus welcomes them into the glory of the Father, whereas the others are rejected and sent to eternal punishment. All right, so the idea of receiving and rejection is certainly a biblical idea. As a matter of fact, that particular word that's translated here, taken, is the same word that Jesus used in John chapter 14 in verse 3, where he says, I go to prepare a place for you, and if I go to prepare a place for you, I will come again to receive you unto myself. That's the word that's being used here. So the translations that translate it taken are tilting the scales a little bit toward the doctrine of the rapture in support of that. And I think it's fair to say that many of our translators, some that I'm getting myself in trouble, Don, that there's a certain segment of translators that do support the doctrine of the rapture, and that might be reflected a little bit in the way that this particular verse is translated. One thing, though, that we always need to do is, what is the context talking about? And the context, beginning with verse 36, is the second coming, and how there are going to be some who are prepared and some who are not prepared. And you've got two women, and they're both going about their lives, but one is ready. You got two men that are going about their lives, but one is ready. And when you read on, that's exactly the point that Jesus is trying to make. He's not trying to champion some doctrine of the rapture, but is instead encouraging the idea of being prepared. Next is 1 Corinthians 15. Verses 51 and 52. Paul says, behold, I tell you a mystery. We shall not all sleep, but we shall all be changed in a moment, in a twinkling of an eye, at the last trumpet. And the trumpet will sound, and the dead will be raised imperishable, and we shall be changed. All right, notice that in verse 51 and then also in verse 52, he uses this word changed, not raptured, but changed. And he is going to explain that when Jesus comes back, these mortal bodies are going to put in immortality, and these perishable bodies will become imperishable. Those are the kind of changes that we're going to undergo. But the idea of our being raptured is what is being suggested here, but that's not at all what the passage is saying. But do note that Jesus says at the last trumpet, and those that support the doctrine of the rapture will say, see, we said six trumpets have already blown. We're ready for the seventh trumpet. And Paul there affirms that idea. Well, Jesus is affirming something that Paul also is affirming in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, and that is that when Jesus returns, there's going to be a loud trumpet sound. And that's the last trumpet, because there's nothing that's going to happen after that, because time is going to end and eternity is going to begin. And that loud shout and the trumpet and all that we're about to look at in 1 Thessalonians 4, well, all of that is indicating what are the events that are going to happen when Jesus comes back. All right, so since we're talking about that passage, let's go ahead and take a look at it. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, verses 16 and 17. And I want to back up just a little bit and read the whole context here. Because the church there at Thessalonica was struggling with what happens to those that have passed away before Jesus has returned. And apparently there was a suggestion by some that it was sort of, well, too bad for them. Oh, well, they died before Jesus came back, and so all of the promises of eternity and the blessings and all that were lost, that it was only going to be something for those that were still alive when Jesus came back. Well, that's what Paul is specifically addressing. Notice, beginning with verse 13, he says, "But we do not want you to be uninformed, brethren, about those who are asleep, that you may not grieve as do the rest who have no hope." Now notice what he says. Don't be grieved about what? About what's happened to those who are asleep. That's in reference to people that have died. In contrast to people that are outside the church, who Paul says here have no hope. He says, verse 14, "For if we believe that Jesus died and rose again, even so God will bring with him those who have fallen asleep in Jesus. For this we say to you by the word of the Lord, that we who are alive and remain until the coming of the Lord shall not precede those who have fallen asleep. For the Lord himself will descend from heaven with a shout, with the voice of the archangel," notice, "and with the trumpet of God, and the dead in Christ shall rise first. Then we who are alive and remain shall be caught up together with them in the clouds to meet the Lord in the air, and thus we shall always be with the Lord. Therefore, comfort one another with these words." All right, so here is the section, and by the way, this is the number one passage that is appealed to support the doctrine of the rapture. Because they argue that the word caught up, if you'll notice in verse 17, "then we who are alive and remain shall be caught up together with them in the cloud." This is a Greek word, harpazo, that is a word that has the idea of something that's going to happen quickly, unexpectedly, just as Jesus said regarding the second coming, that it was going to be something that was going to be quick. But the idea of raptured is not a necessary definition. You might be interested, where does the word rapture come from? It actually comes from the Latin of this passage, and it uses the word raptus, and since, and therefore, we have the word rapture that comes from that. Examples of this word in other places, for those of you that are taking notes, we won't take time to look at these, but Matthew 12 and verse 29, Matthew 13, verse 19, John 6 and verse 15 are other places where this word, harpazo, is used. Again, Matthew 12, 29, Matthew 13, 19, John 6, 15. So the context is to provide comfort to those regarding the Christians who have died before Christ's return. It is not a passage designed to teach the doctrine of the rapture or trying to defend any such doctrine whatsoever, but it needs to be left in its context, and that is what Paul is trying to do there. We'll look at one more, 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verses 1 through 3. "Now we request you, brethren, with regard to the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ and our gathering together to him, that you may not be quickly shaken from your composure or be disturbed either by a spirit or a message or a letter as if it were from us, to the effect that the day of the Lord has come. Let no one in any way deceive you, for it will not come unless the apostasy comes first and the man of lawlessness is revealed, the son of destruction. Now they focus specifically on verse 1 as far as rapture terminology, where he says, "Now we request you, brethren, with regard to the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ and our gathering together to him." Well, there are those that say that that word there means are being raptured together with Jesus. But as we've noted earlier, the word there doesn't mean raptured. Our being collected or gathering together is the idea there. You know, Jesus told a number of parables in Matthew 13 that are relevant to this particular idea. Go back to Matthew 13 and let's look at two parables. First, in the parable of the tares, notice what Jesus says in verse 40. Matthew 13, verse 40. "Therefore, just as the tares are gathered up and burned with fire, so it shall be at the end of the age. And the Son of Man will come forth with his angels, and they will gather out of his kingdom all stumbling blocks and those who commit lawlessness, and will cast them into the furnace of fire. In that place there shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth." So you'll notice that when judgment day comes, there's a gathering of everyone, both good and evil. And then look at the parable of the dragnet just a few verses later in verse 47. "Again, the kingdom of heaven is like a dragnet cast into the sea and gathering fish of every kind. And when it was filled, they drew it up on the beach, and they sat down and gathered the good fish into containers, but the bad they threw away." Now, this is admittedly a difficult passage for those who support the doctrine of the rapture, because it sure does seem to indicate that the net, which is God's judgment, is that which gathers both the good and the bad all at the same time, and there is a separation of the good and bad. That's what the parable is teaching. And the doctrine of the rapture can't allow that to be what happens. There has to be the good that are separated, raptured, and then the evil that are left. Well, that's not what these two parables indicate. Plus, you also note that the wicked are going to be removed from the righteous, but the doctrine of the rapture has it the other way around. The righteous are going to be removed from the wicked. The wicked are what's left, but that's not the language that Jesus uses. So, as we've already noted, current events are rising the temperature in regard to end times with every new war. And if you pay any attention to these kind of things at all, you know that what is presently happening in the Ukraine is one with the warmongers and those that are predicting end times are lining themselves up saying, "See, this is what we're talking about." And they'll use that as an example. Well, those of you in Florida are not long removed from Hurricane Ian. And, well, guess what? Another example that the end is near. You're going to have major weather events, and those weather events are going to be signs that the end is near. So the rhetoric increases, but the problem is this has been the case for 2,000 years. You might be familiar with a particular guy by the name of David Meade. He's a doomsday predictor, has prophesied that the rapture is going to occur on April 23rd. And he is, according to his description of himself, a Christian numerologist, and he's authored 14 books on the impending end of the world. And through all of his numerical calculations, April 23rd is going to be the day. The problem was that was April 23rd, 2018. Whoops. We kind of missed that just a little bit. And this is one of the things that I've got off the internet that I thought was absolutely hilarious, where you've got all of these various predictions, and let's X through that one, and let's put a line through that one, and let's move on to another date, and another date, another date after that. Sometimes there's these little comments like, okay, really, 2008, or we're serious this time, it's 2012, and so on. There have been, without trying to exaggerate at all, hundreds of end-time predictions in the last 2,000 years. And they continue to roll in. And surprisingly to me, and I'm not sure that I can offer a logical explanation for it, people keep doing it, despite the fact that they have failed horribly and embarrassed themselves with these false predictions, yet they keep bringing them in. So we started with the question, is the rapture biblical? Is the doctrine of the rapture biblical? This is a question all Bible believers ask. It's a fair question that is asked by genuine truth seekers. And the answer to the question is a resounding no. It is not a doctrine that is taught by the Bible. It's not a biblical doctrine. And there are a number of reasons why it is not a biblical doctrine. Some of these are review, some of these are new, but in the time that we have left, let's answer the question as to why the doctrine of the rapture is not a biblical doctrine. First of all, and you might find this interesting and maybe even a little bit surprising, is it is a doctrine that really was embraced for the first time in the 1800s. We went a long time without those who were Bible believers believing anything like this until it gained some traction in the 1800s. And since then, it's been applied to just about everything. It was applied to World War I. It was applied to World War II. It was applied to Vietnam. It was applied to the Persian Gulf War. And now it's applied to the attack on the Ukraine by Russia. And it is so often mentioned with the Battle of Armageddon that people assume that these are all established on biblical truths and the prediction of future events, when none of that is true whatsoever. Second of all, the word rapture, as we have briefly mentioned, is not in the Bible, not even their go-to verse in 1 Thessalonians 4:17. Even Hal Lindsey was honest enough to admit that the word rapture was not in the Bible. Now, he would say, but the idea is there, but the word is not. If this is as major a biblical doctrine as they claim it is, and with so many passages discussing the end of time, you would think that somewhere there would be a passage that would have indicated clearly or even have mentioned this particular doctrine, but it's not in the Bible. Consider these two points. First of all, when Jesus comes back, it is going to be visible. In Acts chapter 1, when Jesus was taken up into heaven, ascended into heaven, the angels there told the disciples in verse 11, Acts 1 and verse 11, "Men of Galilee, why do you stand looking into the sky? This Jesus, who's been taken up from you into heaven, will come in just the same manner as you have watched him go into heaven." So a very visible appearing of Jesus, according to what the Bible teaches. 2 Thessalonians chapter 1. Verse 7 says, "And to give relief to you who are afflicted, and to us as well, when the Lord Jesus shall be revealed from heaven, notice, with his mighty angels in flaming fire. Well, that doesn't sound like one day you look over and your husband or wife is gone, or your co-worker is gone. Jesus is coming, and it's going to be clear to everyone. As a matter of fact, and we'll, again, we'll talk about this tomorrow, but in Matthew 24, Jesus says that the lightning flashes from the east to the west, so also will the coming of the Son of Man be. There's going to be something that's going to be very clear and visible when Jesus comes back. Not going to be any confusion about that. All right, we'll move on, even though I've got some other verses up there for you to consider. It's also going to be clearly audible. In 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, passage that we just read a minute ago, but notice this verse when thinking about sound. For the Lord himself will descend from heaven with a shout, with the voice of the archangel, with the trumpet of God. Doesn't sound like a very quiet event to me, does it to you? Well, he's coming. There's a shout. There's trumpets. There's all sorts of stuff going on. There's not going to be any confusion whatsoever. And then a passage in 2 Peter chapter 3, talk about noise. Peter says, but the day of the Lord will come like a thief, in which the heavens will pass away with a roar, and the elements will be destroyed with intense heat, and the earth and its works will be burned up. So you've got this roar sound, this huge deafening sound when Jesus comes back. All right, next, the idea of the left, or of the lost being left, violates the teachings of Jesus in Matthew 13. All right, we already looked at this passage, so we'll not go back and look at it again. But in the parable of the tares and the parable of the dragnet, everyone is being collected. Judgment is that which is universal and includes all of everyone, both the righteous and the unrighteous. The idea of separate resurrections contradicts the teaching of Jesus in Matthew 5, 28 and 29. Now let's look at that passage, and we're going to make another point later about this verse. Years ago, I was reading a guy that supported the doctrine of the rapture, and he said, to be perfectly honest, I really have a problem with John 5, 28 and 29. I thought, yeah, I could see why you would, because it doesn't fit at all. Do not marvel at this, for an hour is coming in which all who are in the tombs shall hear his voice and shall come forth. Notice, all that are in the tombs shall hear his voice. When, Jesus, is that going to happen? 7 years separated from each other, right? No, an hour comes when all who are in the tombs shall hear, there's an audible, his voice, come forth, those who did the good deeds to a resurrection of life, those who committed the evil deeds to a resurrection of judgment. Now, if the doctrine of rapture was true, then Jesus is contradicting that doctrine. There's no way that the tenets of the doctrine of the rapture can fit into John 5, 28 and 29. It just can't happen. There are too many things that are said here that fly in the face of that particular doctrine. Next, the scriptures say nothing about a 7-year tribulation period. You say, where does the 7-year come from? And it's through some creative interpretation on their part, but the Bible never says that. It has to be inserted. Matthew 24, 21, which is a passage talking about the great tribulation, is actually a passage talking about the destruction of Jerusalem, and not talking about what's going to happen immediately before the rapture, or depending on which rapturist you're reading. Some argue that the Great Tribulation happens during the seven-year period of time. Well, neither is correct. It's Jesus is talking about the destruction of Jerusalem. And then think about this. Christ is reigning now, according to the Bible. Jesus says in Matthew 28, all authority has been given to me on heaven and on earth. He claims at that point to have all authority. Numerous other passages, like 1 Corinthians 15, also confirm the fact that Jesus is now reigning. Now, Zechariah chapter 6, verses 12 and 13, makes an interesting prophecy about the Messiah. And that is, he's going to concurrently hold two offices, king and priest. And he's going to have those two offices at the same time. Well, it is very clear from the book of Hebrews that Jesus is now serving as our high priest. Well, if Zechariah 6, 12, and 13 is true, then that means that Jesus is also reigning as king, which is exactly what passages like Revelation 1 and verse 6 confirm. So now is the time. The idea of the rapture, seven-year period of time, Jesus coming back, establishing his kingdom in Jerusalem, is placing himself as king, that isn't going to happen. He's king now. All right, I said we wanted to make a separate point about this, but there's one resurrection for all, which is going to happen at the same time. And that one resurrection is going to be followed by the day of judgment. This is what John confirms in Revelation 20, 11 through 15. All who are in the tomb shall hear his voice. Those who did the good deeds to a resurrection of life, Jesus said, John 5. And then John is using similar terminology in Revelation 20, that the dead and the small are going to be before the throne. The sea is going to give up the dead that was in it, the great and the small. Everyone is going to be there. And so one massive resurrection of all, and that fits the parable of the tares and the parable of the dragnet in Matthew 13. And then, according to 1 Corinthians 15, Christ is going to give his kingdom to God, a kingdom that he has now, and then the earth is going to be destroyed. How do you establish a kingdom on earth set up in Jerusalem when the Bible teaches that this earth is going to be destroyed? Excuse me, 2 Peter chapter 3 and verse 10. So the idea of Jesus setting anything up on this earth is simply not a biblical idea. All right. Josh, how am I doing?
You got about 2 minutes.
Okay. That could not be better. Let's wrap this up. Some other problems that I'll just briefly mention is that the timetable is very confusing. And if you've read or studied the rapture and the different people that have written on the rapture, then you probably have a head that's spinning like most people, because they cannot even get close to agreeing with one another on how these things are going to happen. And the events that are going to occur are very vague. They're vastly different. They have problems of having to be creative with the interpretation of some Bible words to kind of fit the square peg in the round hole doctrine of the rapture. While the world longs for a heads up, and you say, Diddy, what's this really all about? The main thing is people want a heads up. I'd like a little advance warning when Jesus is going to come. And one simple truth remains. Jesus is coming like a thief in the night. Jesus is coming at a time that you don't think that he will. And so we just need to be ready. And that's what Jesus teaches, Paul teaches, John teaches. And so let's just be ready, and it won't matter. So thank you very much.